This is going to be another installment in that series I've been calling Bible Snapshots. I'm looking at fairly short vignettes in the Bible. A snapshot or a photograph might be defined as a moment frozen in time. So we're looking at fairly short stories in the Bible. Because theoretically, I'm going to keep my lesson short. And so we're going to be looking this morning at another short story at the end of Mark, the 12th chapter. The end of Mark, the 12th chapter. This is the story of the widow's, the poor widow's gift of two mites. Now, mite in this instance is spelled M-I-T-E-S. I did not use that term because it's an old-fashioned word for old English coinage. But that's what a mite was. It used to be a small amount of money in England, I suppose. And she only gave a small amount of money. This is in Mark, the 12th chapter, verses 41 through 44. Actually, both Mark and Luke record this rather beautiful and remarkable story of a small gift a poor widow put into the temple treasury. Luke's version of this is in Luke 21, verses 1 through 4. But I have decided I'm going to go with Mark's version of it in Mark 12, 41 through 44, because he includes a few subtle details that Luke does not. So we're going to look at Mark 12, verses 41 through 44. Since it's short, it's only four verses, I will take the time to read that passage. Beginning with verse 41 of Mark 12, we see that it says, "And he sat down opposite the treasury and began observing how the multitude were putting money into the treasury. And many rich people were putting in large sums. And a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which amount to a cent. And calling his disciples to him, he said to them, 'Truly I say to you, this poor widow put in more than all the contributors to the treasury. For they all put in out of their surplus. But she, out of her poverty, put in all she owned, all she had to live on.'" Let's put this story in context now. That's important. Jesus had just rebuked, even excoriated, the Pharisees, as is recorded in Matthew, the 23rd chapter, in the temple for their many acts of hypocrisy. Luke 16, verse 14 tells us that they were lovers of money, as a matter of fact. And also, it's important to note that in the verse, namely Mark 12, verse 40, just preceding the paragraph I read, Jesus has just observed that they devour widows' houses. That is, apparently, when widows could not pay their obligations, it was determined that their houses should be confiscated to pay for their obligations, and the widows themselves, of course, evicted from their houses. Beyond that, the Pharisees and the other Jewish leaders had allowed the temple to become a venue for business undertakings. And as a matter of fact, Jesus just the previous day had cleansed the temple of those who were selling animals for sacrifice. And the money changers were sent out also by Jesus. So this is the context then in which Mark records, or Jesus made these observations on the gift of the poor widow. So after his condemnation of the Pharisees, but before he left the temple, Jesus sat down opposite the treasury and observed those who were contributing into it. From his seat, he saw rich givers putting in large sums of money. While the widow, what did she give? She just put in two small copper coins. The plural form is lepta, L-E-P-T-A. The singular is lepton. So she put in two lepta, which were the smallest coins in circulation. Before the widow left the scene, Jesus stressed to his disciples the importance of her gift, despite the fact that it was so small. He did this in two ways. He called the disciples to himself. Apparently, they were standing apart from him, but he thought this was so important for them to observe. This was something they needed to learn. So he said, come over here. I've got something to tell you, in effect. And then he said, or used the word, truly. Truly. Or it's really the case, in other words, that this widow has given more than the others. I am telling you the truth. He emphasizes that. Now, though it's something of an aside for me to add this, this is an opportunity for me to observe also that Jesus displayed his divine omniscience, or his ability to know all things as God on this occasion. How did he do that? Well, he saw how much the others were giving. Sitting some distance away from people who are putting into coffers of some sort, the average person is not going to be able to tell how much those people are putting in. Typically, we don't hold up our contributions and wave them around and say, look how much I'm getting. And we shouldn't do that, of course. But I'm assuming the people then did not do that either. Yet Jesus knew how much they were putting in. He also knew that this woman was a widow. Apparently, she was a stranger to him. So how would he have known that she was a widow? It's possible that she could have worn widow's garb or something like that, but not necessarily. This is something that he would have known anyway, even if there had been no outward signs of her widowhood, because he was God. He saw this woman giving. He knew she was a widow because he was God and had that kind of knowledge. He also knew that she was poor. Again, we would ask, how did he know she was poor? Was she dressed in rags or something like that? That's possible, but again, this is something that he would have known anyway. He also saw how much she gave. Two lepta. He knew she just gave a small amount. Now again, let me emphasize, if you were to put a couple of pennies into, or some change into the collection plate, if I were sitting at least 10 feet away, I wouldn't be able to tell exactly how much you put in. But Jesus knew. Jesus knew. How? Again, his omniscience. And also, he knew that she had put in all that she had. Now, how did he know that? Again, same thing. Because he was God. And as God, he is omniscient. He has knowledge that we do not have. Let me press on now to a couple of lessons. And the first one that I want to mention is one that I guess I could say is obvious. What is Jesus trying to teach us here? That is that just as was the case with this widow and her gift, so it should be with us. When we give, we should give sacrificially. Those who give to God, and this has always been the case throughout the scriptures, those who give to God should make their giving a real and genuine sacrifice on their part. Jesus emphasizes that this widow gave much by first emphasizing her inability to give much in the absolute sense. He did this in three ways that I want to mention. First of all, he observes that she was a widow. Now, as is the case today, so it was back then, perhaps even more so 2,000 years ago. husbands tend to die before their wives do. That's not always the case. My father is a widower. But most of the time, the husband dies before his wife does. And therefore, there tends to be more widows than widowers. Even here at Piscataway, as I was thinking about it, I believe, unless I've overlooked some, I believe we have two widows in the church. I can't think, I've been here 29 years this month, I can't think of us ever having had a widower who was a member here. So I'm emphasizing the fact that there tended to be many more widows than widowers. Jesus made reference to the fact that in the time of Elijah, Luke 4, verse 25, there were many widows. That is typically the case. There are many widows. Not so many widowers, but widows. Now, the reason I'm saying that is to emphasize that not only were there many widows, but widows were a very vulnerable part of society. It's not like today. Today, widows can have some security. They can draw their, at least here in the United States, they can draw their husband's Social Security income. There are provisions that our government makes and society makes for the care of widows. Actually, back then, there were some official provisions made for widows also, but not as much so as today. Ancient women were financially dependent upon their husbands to begin with. This was so much the case that if a woman became a widow at a young age, particularly before she had children who might be able then to step into her husband's place and help provide for her, she was expected to go back to her father's house. She could not live independently, in other words, by herself. That's the way it was. So Paul said in 1 Timothy 5, verse 14, I want the younger widows to get married. Back then, marriage was a more practical arrangement, a more economic arrangement than is the case today. Today, people get married because they fall in love and they are romantically involved with one another. Now, I'm not going to say that that never happened back then because I know that it did. But overarching the idea of marriage was the fact that women needed some way to have their economic and financial needs, their physical needs met. And the primary way for a woman to do that was to get married. So if she lost her husband and didn't have children to take care of her, she had to go back to her father's house. And if her father had already died, then she was really in dire straits. So women, to a large extent, had to depend upon religious institutions, or they were at the mercy of society, particularly if they didn't have older children to take care of them. By the way, this is an aside, but let me take this opportunity to say this. This helps us to appreciate what Jesus said regarding divorce and remarriage in Matthew 5, verse 32, where he said, if a man puts away his wife except for the cause of fornication or sexual unfaithfulness, he makes her commit adultery. The word makes there, as in makes her commit adultery, is not to be taken literally. What it means there is that he puts his wife under intense pressure to remarry because she has that financial, that physical, that economic need to seek out another husband. He had her first husband or prior husband has put her in that condition. And then in remarrying, she will commit adultery. So Jesus, first of all, emphasizes that this was a real sacrifice on the widow's part because she was a widow. Widows tended not to have much financial security, to put it mildly. But second, he referred to her financial status. And he uses two different terms to do this. Now, these two terms are synonyms. They mean practically the same thing. However, there is a subtle, nuanced difference between them. First of all, he says, she was poor. Secondly, he says, she was in poverty. Those two words, poor and poverty, are represented by different Greek words, and they have slightly different meanings. You can be poor, but barely have what you need to have to survive. But to be in poverty, or perhaps we should use the word needy here, to be needy means just that. You need something to survive. You lack what is necessary to survive. So this poor widow was not only poor, but she was even lacking in the basic necessities of life. Third, Jesus emphasizes the sacrificial nature of her giving by citing how much she gave. Again, we encounter two Greek homonyms here, words that mean practically the same thing, but they have subtle differences, at least in application here. First of all, he says, she put in all that she had. Let me emphasize here that it is Mark's account that uses these two different words. I told you at the beginning that I wanted to use Mark's account because he gives a few more details than Luke does in his account. So first of all, he says he put in all that she had. Okay? But that's not it. He goes beyond that, lest somebody thinks that he might have meant all she could afford to put in. He goes on to say she gave literally, this is the literal rendition of the Greek or translation of the Greek, she gave the whole of her life. Most versions say that she put in her whole living, or all of her living, all that she had to live on. The word whole here, she put in the whole of her life, is different from the all in the expression, she gave all that she had. Now, some people might come to assemblies such as this, they may put something in the collection plate or the coffer, the treasury, and they may say, oh, I gave all that I had, because all they had was maybe a $5 or $10 bill in their wallet at the time. That's not what Jesus is saying. And he wants to make that clear by saying she not only gave all that she had, but all that she had was all that she had to live on, the whole of her life or livelihood, as he put it. Her great poverty is indicated by the fact that she had, this is all she had, just 2 lepta. To use an old American expression, she just had a dime to her name. And that was about all she had. Or that was indeed all she had, according to the record here. Now, various coins with Greek names are referred to in the Greek New Testament. And we're kind of unsure about what terms to use to translate them into English. The old English word, as I mentioned at the beginning of the lesson, was mite. She gave 2 mites. I thought about entitling this lesson, The Widow's 2 Mites. But I said, no, even that's the old expression used in the King James Version that a lot of people grew up on, including myself. Today, people might not know, understand what 2 mites refers to. So I just referred to her gift. It was nevertheless, though, 2 lepta. Now, the lepton was the smallest coin in circulation at that time. From the scriptures, we can learn most of this information. Some of it we have to go to history to get. But 2 lepta equaled 1 quadrans, 4 quadrans, 1 asarion, and 16 Assyrians, one denarius. Now, I don't expect you to do the math. I remember all of that. But if my math is correct, then it took 128 lepta to equal one denarius. Now, what's the significance of a denarius? Well, the denarius, according to Matthew 20, verse 2, was the standard daily wage for the common laborer. Now, that's what the common laborer for a day's work could expect to get, one denarius. And it took 128 lepta to equal one day's wage. Okay? All she had was two lepta, which was 1/64th. 1/64th of a day's wage. And yet, she didn't even save one lepton for herself. She had two lepta. You might think, okay, this is all I've got. Putting in one of the two will be enough. She did not think that way. Instead, she put both of them in. Both of the lepta, all that she had, in other words. Now, let me try to get you to appreciate how little this was and how little she had then. Jesus said in Matthew 10, verse 29, are not two sparrows sold for a cent? Now, the word cent there is Assyrian. And according to my calculations then, I grant you, my math is not good. It might not be right, but I figured out with two lepta, she had enough money to buy half a sparrow. Now, I hate to say this to all of you who may be bird lovers out there, but they ate songbirds back then. As a matter of fact, in some parts of the world, environmentalists and ornithologists are concerned about the populations of songbirds because people catch them in their big nets, their big mesh nets, and they eat them. And a sparrow, we have sparrows in this country, they're just about the smallest bird that we ever see in this country. I think it is the smallest bird. There is a hummingbird, I think, on the island of Cuba that is the smallest bird in the world. But for us here, the sparrow is the smallest bird that we ever see. There's not much meat on the bones of a sparrow, especially after it's plucked. All right, and the head is taken off. Sorry to be too gory if I'm being too gory, but people ate sparrows. If you wanted a lunch, you might find someone who was selling sparrows. You buy a few. Doesn't go too far, but at least it gets you through to supper or dinner time. So Jesus said, two sparrows are sold for a cent. And that's not the word lepton there. That's Assyrian. So you have to do the math. But if I have figured it correctly, her two lepta would buy no more than half a sparrow. That's not even a decent lunch. Imagine if you were so poor that you could not afford to go to some fast food restaurant like Burger King or McDonald's and buy even a decent lunch there. That's how bad it was with this widow. Let me emphasize then, on the basis of all that has said, that God has always required that giving be significant, substantial, and sacrificial. What matters is not how much is given, but how much is left after giving. Jesus said to lay up treasures in heaven, not pocket change, in Matthew 6, verse 20. According to 1 Corinthians 16, verse 2, a Christian should give as he may prosper, not as he may have left over after he buys anything and everything he wants. Christians should give until it hurts. Now, I don't like preaching on monetary giving into the church's collection. The reason for that is simple. It sounds very self-interested, since I am far and away the largest beneficiary of what goes into the church's collection. Nevertheless, I have an obligation to tell you what Jesus told you. He praised the poor widow because she gave sacrificially. What is that telling us? We need to give sacrificially. We do need to give until it hurts. We do need to give until we feel deprived. There were those in the early Jerusalem church who sold their property, who sold their houses, surplus houses and property, I would suppose, but nevertheless, took the proceeds then and gave it to the church for distribution among the poor and so forth, of their number. I cannot afford to be too specific, but I feel the need to be more specific perhaps than I have been in the past when addressing this matter. If we're doing pretty well financially, if we're living a good middle-class life in the United States, and we live in the most affluent country in the world, and we have fairly typical or standard wages that allow us to live a comfortable middle-class life, and we don't have any outstanding bills or debts that we have not created unnecessarily for ourselves, I see no reason then, and I will be so bold as to be this specific, I see no reason then why each household or each individual should not be giving hundreds of dollars into the church's treasury every month. I see no reason why that could not be the case. We're not poor, generally speaking, in this country. It should not be the case. We just throw in a few dollars every week. If we're living a good middle-class life, and barring medical bills and such like that we didn't bring upon ourselves, we should be able to put significant sums into the church's treasury. If we're not doing that, we need to ask ourselves why. Why not? Let me go on to say that giving should make a difference in our lifestyle. In other words, you should be able to see that other people in your community, your neighborhood, your country are able to buy things that you cannot afford. Maybe they have a bigger or better car, more expensive car, bigger, better, more expensive house, but you cannot afford that because in order to afford what they have, you would have to put less into the church's treasury. Now, I'm not trying to say that we need to impoverish ourselves, that we cannot live comfortably with our giving to the church. What I am trying to say, though, is that we ought to be able to say, if I weren't giving this much to the church, I would be able to travel here and travel there. I'd be able to have nicer vacations, nicer car, a bigger house. Instead, I'm going to have to settle for something less than what I would like to have because I'm giving a significant amount of money to the Lord. After all, that's what this widow did, and Jesus commended her. Second lesson, one's obligations to God must always be fulfilled, if at all possible. This widow did not refrain from giving because she had so little to give that she thought she might as well not give at all. It would have been easy for her to think, two lepta? Just two lepta? That's not going to make any difference. Therefore, I should not give it. Jesus reminds us in passages like Luke 16:10, Luke 19, verse 17, that he who is faithful in little is faithful in much. We need to be conscientious about our giving. What we might call low-level obedience prepares us for high-level obedience. If we cannot, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to make a reference now to our attendance here at assemblies like this. If people could not, before the coronavirus struck, if people could not bring themselves out of their homes and attend here like they should have, do you think then during a period of hardship they're going to attend like they should? Listen, we need to be faithful in little things because the conscientiousness that causes us to say, even in this little matter, I'm going to do what the Lord requires, even though it is a little matter. That kind of conscientiousness will prepare us that when the time comes and we're called upon to make a big sacrifice or obey the Lord in a large way, we'll be prepared in our consciences to do that. This widow did not even have, in this case, H-A-L-V-E, cut in half. She had two left her. You would think, okay, give one to the Lord. Keep the other for myself. That's understandable. No, she put in both of them. Also, she did not allow others to discourage her from discharging her obligation. You know, how would you feel if you were in her position and you saw a bunch of rich people line up and are coming up to the coffers and dropping in these sacks of money or whatever they were giving. And all you've got is the equivalent of 2 cents, 2 pennies. Would you say, oh, it's their giving that's going to make the difference, not mine. I might as well not give then. But she did not allow what they did or did not do to dictate what she felt she needed to do. Let's not look around at what others are giving. If there was a billionaire in the congregation, Jerry was recently telling me about one church that has a billionaire in its membership. Okay? I've heard of other churches that have millionaires. Those churches don't have any financial problems like we do here at Piscataway. But let me ask you this. If you had a billionaire in the same church you were in, or millionaires, would you let that change how much you gave? No, your giving is between you and God. Don't think about everybody else. It's between you and God. You just recognize what you need to do and do it, regardless of what others may or may not do. Here's something else to consider. She did not allow any bitterness arising from knowing that the Pharisees made themselves rich off of the misery of poor widows like her, knowing that there were merchants in the temple making merchandise of a place of worship. She could have been embittered by that. She could have said, well, if that's the way they're going to behave, I'm not even going to come, much less give anything. That was not her attitude. Her attitude was, listen, the answer to God, I have to answer for myself. I'm going to do what I need to do, regardless of, again, of what others do or don't do. But sometimes it is so easy to get bitter, to look around at others and say, oh, they're so bad that instead of rising to where we ought to be, we allow their bad example to take us down. All that mattered to her was that she did what was right, even if others did not. The actions of others, whether or not life is fair, and it's not, had nothing to do with her obligations to God. Her obligation was to God, regardless of what others did or did not do. She recognized that, and we do, and we need to do so today also. In conclusion, the action of this otherwise insignificant widow did not escape Jesus' observation. It's interesting to note that Jesus called his disciples to himself to give them instruction based upon her example. He did not embarrass her. He did not violate her privacy. He did not try to create pride in her and her giving. by speaking out loud about how little she had given, or comparatively much she had given. He did not yell out, say, "Hey, everybody, look at this woman." No, he did not violate her privacy. Instead, he quietly called his disciples over to himself and spoke to them about her. But we have to ask ourselves, would we be embarrassed if it were known that we gave only two mites when we might have many, many times as much to give or could give? Now, we can make application of these principles to other aspects of the Christian's life. How much time do we give to the Lord? Are we stingy with our time to give to the Lord? Our strength. I made reference early to a couple of people who had used their strength and their skills to make furniture for the church. There are various ways in which we can serve God and give to Him. Do we give of our physical property? If someone needs a ride to the church building, are we willing to take the time and go out of our way and use the gas in our gas tanks to go there and pick them up? There are various ways in which we can serve God. Sacrifice ourselves for the Lord. My apologies to the Spanish speakers who won't get this pun, but I found it hard to resist. I like puns, by the way. You might have noticed that. But Christians should be mighty givers. Mighty, in this case, spelled M-I-G-H-T-Y, not mighty givers, M-I-T-E-Y. In other words, it's all right to give two mites if that's all you've got. But don't we have more than that? I'll close with a statement that I read from someone else to the effect that we should give cheerfully. The flint gives off sparks when it is giving a hard glancing blow. The lemon yields juice when it is squeezed. But the rose releases its fragrance for nothing and seems happy to do so. Thank you for listening.